Hey, this is Jordan Johnson, and you're listening to the Grove Podcast. We are nearing the end of our spring podcast season before we break for summer, but we have some really special and important episodes saved up, including a fun opportunity for you to join forces with us during our summer break, so be sure to stay tuned. Today's episode is no exception as we welcome the one and only Maya Moore to the podcast. Many of you know Maya from her long list of accomplishments in the NCAA, the WNBA, and beyond. She's been a key player on more than a dozen teams that have won championships, ranging from her time at UConn to the WNBA to Olympic gold medals to professional leagues around the globe. But not only is she a phenomenal basketball player, likely the best female of all time, she is an exceptional human. She's passionate about activism and social justice and is making her mark on culture in countless ways. One of our favorite things about Maya is that she is part of our Passion City Church family and serves faithfully here week after week. She's a regular in our worship choir, and recently she shared her story at our Freedom Grove gathering where we bring the Grove to imprisoned women of Atlanta. It was amazing. She brought so much hope and encouragement to the women there that night, and we're so grateful to get to walk alongside her as part of our house. Today, we'll hear from her as she sits down with Shelley Giglio and talks about what it looked like growing up in a single-parent home, the life lessons she learned from her coaches, and how her foundation of faith in Jesus helped ground her through all of her success. So here's Shelley Giglio with Maya Moore.
Hey guys, it's Shelley, and we are here with Maya Moore, the one and only Maya Moore. Some of you know Maya from being around the Grove. Other of you might not have met Maya yet, but she is a world-famed basketball player in the WNBA, and she has done remarkable things in her career, some of which I want her to tell you about because she'll be super embarrassed and turn red doing it, and it just makes me happy when we put Maya on the hot seat. But Maya has become one of my most favorite people, and that's why I think today is such a gift. And Maya is able to articulate things of God in such a fresh perspective in a new way. And you guys are going to love every single word of what she communicates. She has the way of speaking about the profound things of God in such a simple, attainable way. And she follows Jesus so closely, and it's just been a joy for me to get to know her for the last few years. And what a joy today to think that you're going to know her, too. So welcome, Maya. We're glad you're here.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to be here.
Man, it's awesome. I want to start out today just talking a little bit, and I want you to tell us about your accomplishments, but I'm going to give you an easier start. Let's start today talking about your childhood, because you grew up in Atlanta, which I love. You're in Atlanta. Well, kind of.
Partial
Atlanta
I'm
girl.
A step Atlanta.
Yeah, you
child.
I feel like you kind of came into Atlanta in a season in your life, and now we call you our own. So
yeah.
Tell us about your life. Just tell us about growing up and kind of your environment, and talk about you as a kid a little bit so that we can just imagine what that was like.
Oh, boy. Yes. I can call my mom, put her on speakerphone.
I would love it so much. She's the best.
Oh, man, my mom. Yes. So my mom raised me as a single parent. And I was born in Jefferson City, Missouri,
right,
until I was 11. And then when I was 12, I moved to Metro Atlanta. I went to high school in most of middle school and all of high school in Gwinnett County up at Collins Hill. CHHS, let's go, Eagles.
I have a niece that went to Collins Hill. It's a good school.
Come on. Best of the best.
Yes, you made it that.
Yeah, so grew up in Missouri, had some awesome extended family that I grew up with until I was 11. I was one of those kids. My mom said I was a really good baby. And then I turned 2.
And then what? Yeah.
I turned 2 and I started to realize I can say no to stuff.
Yeah.
And I became a very, I'll just call myself a spirited child.
Yes.
So there was some changes as far as this quiet little peaceful baby, and then I became just really energetic and just into everything and just very high energy. And so that made for some interesting times at school sometimes. Wasn't always easy. Mom was up at the school.
Explaining your behavior?
Yes, that's a nice way to say it. Explaining, helping to explain the behavior. You know, growing up in a predominantly white area, this high energy, kind of wild black kid didn't make it easy at times, but thankfully my mom is very committed and was always there for me. And so she would help me. And a combination of my mom and my grandmother just parented me, you know, just stuck with me and got me, just tried to give me structured activities. And my fourth grade teacher, Mrs. Henderson, I don't know if I'll ever be able to call her by her first name. You know how that is with your teachers.
Yeah, you never know when that point is.
It's like, is this okay?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I know I'm 29, but
it still feels
can
inappropriate.
Can I call you Joni? Yeah. I don't know. So I'll just, no, I won't. And, you know, she pretty helped me change my life as far as just encouraging me and encouraging me for my energy. You know, if I needed to stand up and do my work, she'd let me stand up and do my work.
Yeah, brilliant.
And just believing in me, believing in her students, and even to this day, she's family. So
that's amazing. So
just moments like that in my childhood, and then basketball came into the picture. I played every sport growing up. I was just active, loved to play outside. I don't know if I was one of the last Mohicans to actually play outside, like as a kid.
Oh man, my whole life we weren't even allowed to come inside.
You know, yeah. It's like, what are you doing in here? Go outside.
Exactly.
So streetlights came on. My get in the house.
Yeah.
Do I have
to? That was your cue.
So I was just always playing and rallying up the neighborhood kids and making up games and playing sports. And so right around age eight or nine, I realized basketball was my favorite sport. And so my mom, through the encouragement of my great aunt, signed me up for an AAU basketball team, which is a traveling competitive team. And so then life was never the same.
I can see that.
Played year after year after year, played up. So I was always the youngest to challenge myself. And my mom saying, like, that's good for you. And I adopted that mentality of liking the challenge. And by the time I was a senior in high school, I had played 9 seasons of AAU. So almost a decade of competitive sports before I got to UConn and had that amazing career that I had at UConn. So.
Yeah. I think what's cool, because I think about a lot of parents right now that are raising kids that have more energy than they know how to harness. They're in a situation where they feel outmatched.
Mm-hmm.
My kid is dominating my life.
Yeah.
They're dominating our family. We don't know what to do with them. I think about the patience of your mom to see something good in that and to be able to not sit on you and create somebody different in you, but to actually encourage you to be fully who you are, but to harness that into a direction that made sense for you. And I think sports became your outlet for a lot of energy, right?
For sure.
That's where you were burning the things off. But it was also, I think, her way of creating an idea for you that you could do something meaningful, even profitable with that energy.
Yeah.
Talk about how she kind of directed you, and did she help you figure that out with basketball? Or did it really just become your favorite and that's how you kind of went that path?
So I love our story because we're in a time now where, unfortunately, sports has become like a business by the time you're 5. You see parents putting kids in sports and specializing. Yeah. And it's like, if you haven't been playing for 8 years by the time you're 8, you're probably not going to make it.
Right.
And I mourn that. Because I honestly got to fall in love with the game because I loved playing basketball.
Yeah.
And it was just something I loved to do. And my mom, you know, she signed me up for all kinds of sports just to kind of keep me, to focus that energy. So I think it was a combination of my mom wanting to help me develop because she's my mom and she loves me and she wanted to take care of me and help me grow. But we had no idea that it was going to turn into what it's turned into as far as my career. And then by the time I was in middle school, she realized, you know, maybe she could get a scholarship and play in college.
Very gifted
and
at
so
this.
My mom challenged me to create a little resume for myself when I was in middle school, just as a cool, fun activity, not knowing like I'm actually going to need this resume when I get to high school and start getting recruited. And it's really helpful for coaches to have a little schedule of where you're going to be. And it just started helping me think ahead and think forward. So my mom, just little nuggets like that. But again, not knowing the bigness of how all this was going to blow up and just totally take over.
And not driving you to be that successful.
Me. No, the drive was always from me, which was the cool part. Like I fell in love with the game organically, but I also wanted to do it. It was never one of those things of Maya, get in the car and go to practice.
Right.
Like I love to practice. I love to play. I'd play all the time just because I loved it. And I was, I don't want to say driven. I just loved it.
Yeah. Talk about how she didn't allow you to neglect everything else. Because I think your mom, and I know your mom very well, And I've watched her. She's still very close to your life and really involved in your career and life. But she's also your mom. And she's done a really good job of helping you understand that as much as you loved basketball, and I'm sure when you were younger, it's all you wanted to do, that you still had to finish school. You still needed to be successful in all areas of life. And she's done a good job, I think, helping you stay that course as well. Talk about that.
Yeah. So my mom's relationship, our relationship has been her helping, loving me in all areas of life, and supporting me and helping me in all areas of life. But I'd say the drive came from me. And so she would acknowledge me as a whole person, I think more so than driving me to be a whole person. You know what I mean? Like, I fell in love with the Lord and his word in middle school, which was a blessing.
Amazing.
And she wasn't telling me get in the car to go to church. I was like, Mom, we got to go to church.
Yeah,
like,
you were driving.
I was on fire. I fell in love with the word, and I didn't need her to push me in that area. Yeah. But for us to go on that journey together and to have conversations and to live life together, and that was everything.
Yeah.
To have her present and there and acknowledging all of me and talking to me as a daughter, as a woman, as a young woman, as I was growing up, and supporting me in school. Like, I was very driven in school.
Yeah.
And so she was just there loving me, not just only when I'm playing basketball, if that makes sense.
The words you use, she acknowledged me in all parts of my life.
Yeah.
Is probably the clearest picture of what it looks like to raise a well-balanced child, right? She didn't highlight you as an athlete.
Right.
And say, I'm going to speak to those accomplishments and that person inside of you, and I'm always going to be calling to that person when I talk to you.
Mm-hmm.
But she actually addressed you as a daughter, as a loved child of God.
It's huge.
As all these things that you were, so that you could understand that those were of equal importance, right?
Yeah. It's looking back, I'm like, my mom was amazing.
Hero.
Yeah.
Talk about being in a single family home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, single parent home, where you had a mom, you didn't have a dad present with you. And just some of the deficits that were there because of that, but also how God has redeemed some of those things. Because I look at you now and I can see God redeemed those things in you. So talk about that process.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, redemptive story that I didn't even know I had. You know, as I've gotten older and started to know God more and more as a father, and meeting and experiencing more and more godly men throughout growing up, I've become such a believer in the beauty and the power and the need for fathers, especially godly fathers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, whatever our culture says, I'm convinced that the best way for kids to grow up is with a mom and with their mom and their dad.
Yeah.
That's always going to be the best option.
Yeah.
But obviously we're in a broken world.
Yes,
and
we are.
That is not, unfortunately, what happens, whether that's both parents there, but both parents aren't well, one parent there. You know, there's all kinds of combos, and God has redeemed a lot of those combos. But that was normal for me growing up with mom. I think it did result in me having emotional issues as a kid. Looking back, I was like, I just knew something was wrong.
Yeah.
And not really understanding why. Having that affirmation of a father, even though I had great godly extended family in my life, my goddad, my grandfather, my great uncle. But there's something about having your father, your dad affirming you and having your identity being affirmed by your biological
father.
And so, which was, I think, a reason why I fell in love with the Lord was because it hit me so hard when I was in middle school, like, God is my father. And he is my identity. He's my security. He is what matters most about who I am. And literally, I remember in middle school, like, calming down and just really walking around through life with just more of a calm and a security and a peace. When I knew God that way, when I started to understand that's who God is, that's who Yahweh is to yeah. me, and to all of us. And so, whether, like I mentioned earlier, my grandfather, my godfather, my great uncle, having those godly men in my life, just modeling for me what it means to show up for your family and to live with passion and to serve people and to meet other awesome godly guys through a ministry called Athletes in Action that I got connected with in college, and just different pastors from churches that I've grown up in, and different, I'd say pastors and some of those men I mentioned in AIA and family members. As far as men walking with the Lord.
Yeah.
And so I'm super blessed to have, I have those handful of men in my life.
They were encouraging you. You know, I think about your family members who were men who never probably had their eye off of you, who mm-hmm. always knew that they served a role in your life of stepping in and providing for you some of that ballast and some of that balance in your life that maybe you didn't have just with a single mom.
Mm-hmm.
And how they, even when they weren't near you by proximity, because some of them don't live in Atlanta area, still had their eye on you.
Yeah.
Still knew that they could give you a gift every day that they had a conversation with you or mm-hmm. every environment they got to see you in. I think about coaches and people like that who step in gaps all the time. Think of all the people in our life who affected us so deeply, who didn't have to, but chose to,
mm-hmm.
who weren't obligated to us as family members, but just believed in us as mm-hmm. people, and how much you carry today that gift around in your life.
So true.
And I feel like we all have it to some degree. I can think about people I worked for. I can think about people that I performed for or, you know, did sports for, who had a major impact on me, who didn't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Had, I'm sure, many other things in their own life that they would have preferred to do.
Yeah.
Yet chose to invest in me in that way. So you're the recipient of a lot of that. And no athlete is as great as you without a lot of that in their life.
Yeah.
But you're also a giver of that. I feel like you exemplify so beautifully what it looks like to not just be about yourself, but to actually turn around and favor and help somebody who's beside or behind you. I mean, you do it every day, but talk about some of those people in your life and how you're aware of them and how you can be an athlete at the highest level and a performer at that, on that big stage, and yet be so mindful of people.
Yeah.
Because it's a beautiful thing in you.
Yeah. Well, thanks. Praise God, because
it's God.
I don't
for
think
sure.
I've always been like that. I think part of it is wiring and in the personality that I have, but obviously most of it is the Holy Spirit is literally inside of me and helping me see people. But I definitely feel like I have one of those personalities that comes alive when I'm around people and enjoys people and being around people and connecting with people. And my mom said I was a super social kid. And I, obviously, as I got older, I remember just loving being around my friends and just being in touch with my friends. But there's a difference when the Lord's living inside of you in not just seeing and enjoying people, but actually seeing them the way he sees them and going a step further of loving them, which means it's going to cost something.
Yeah.
And whether that's energy or convenience or emotion or something material. But again, like we talked about, because I've been loved so well, I feel like I've been shown how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so love means showing up when you say you're going to show up.
Yep.
Like my mom did every day, raising me. Coaches demonstrating that for me. You know, I think about college and all the values I was taught by Gino. And as far as you know, you don't show up on time because you're supposed to show up on time. You show up on time because you respect the people that you're showing up for. And so like, oh, right, I've never connected.
I've never known that's why I'm doing this.
Connecting showing up on time with another
that's
person.
That's powerful.
And it's like, okay, this is impacting someone else when I'm late. And I'm saying your time is not as valuable as mine.
Right.
So just little things like that of how you see people and everything that you do. And you start to realize, man, we're not just out here as individuals. Like, we're always impacting somebody when we wake up. And so it just became a mindset and an awareness that I have the potential to love people in ways that I'm not even aware of, but I also have the potential to not love well. And so, you know, obviously having an abundance of resources in our day and age as far as great communicators of the gospel and of theology, and I'm super nerdy when it comes to theology. I love just diving into all of the great resources that we have of just studying the word. I'm just super passionate. I could just
What are you studying right now that's bringing you to life?
Oh, man.
What are the things that you just feel an unquenchable desire to know more about?
Yeah, so probably I'd say the three lanes are... What order do I want to go in?
This is so good. This is, I like this.
The three lanes, I'll limit it to three. I'd say one is biblical manhood and womanhood.
Wow. That's powerful that, in this age.
That could, and I'm feeling the burden for that.
Yes.
For us, especially in the church. Rest.
And we need to talk about that one.
Yep. Like, these are all year-long talks.
Yeah. We could talk for a while for sure.
Yeah. And also, I'm always fascinated by leadership and culture making. So, which is something that is modeled very well here, and which is something I really appreciate about our house in particular, of the awareness of culture shaping and place making and leadership. And because I've been around so many great leaders through sports and in the church, and the humility that it takes and the daily killing of pride that it takes. And, because when you have good leaders, the people can flourish. And I've been a beneficiary, like we talked about,
so
of
beautiful.
Great leadership. And so I've been able to flourish and be empowered. I'm just thinking, just this highly energetic young Black girl growing up in the middle of the country. And now, because of people who've come in my life and have led me well and empowered me and given me the tools to flourish, not just as a basketball player, but as a human being. And I'm running. You know, I'm able to just run. And
We're watching you run. It's beautiful.
It's just amazing. And so I want other people to have that. And I want other people to be a part of that. And whatever it looks like, it might not look like being me. It might not look like being you, but we can have our lane and run in it. If we can, you know, have a better understanding of what it looks like to lead and to follow. So those are like the three things I'm always having my nose.
I want to talk about leadership for 1 second because I think it's important. I think the thing I say a lot is that the best leaders that I know are great followers. And if Jesus can't lead you as a person, then you're going to have a hard time turning and leading anyone behind you.
Come on, we can walk away now.
I mean that is just the truth. And I have the privilege, you have the privilege of being around a lot of A-type leaders, you know, a lot of them in sports, like you mentioned. I have the privilege of being around them in the church. And I'm around all kinds of leaders and all kinds of leaders in the church. But the ones that I respect and gravitate toward are the ones who are great followers. And if you can be led, then you're going to be a far better leader. And, you know, that's a daily choice because no one can say to you, Maya Moore, hey, you know what? You should let Jesus lead you. You have to choose to let Jesus lead you. You have to wake up every day with what you said is in your heart and go after the things of God. And I can encourage you that you should do that, but I can't make you do that.
Right.
That's your choice. But you have become such a better leader because of your desire to follow Jesus. And it's powerful to watch you do that. And I think powerful for us to do that as well. I want to talk about rest too, because you're in a year of rest, which you chose this year to be a moment where you step aside from all these credentials that you've accumulated. Name them. This is the point at which you turn red. I want to hear the things that you've been a part of. Come on, Maya. It's an unbelievable list.
Isn't there a scripture about letting other people?
The only reason you're saying it is because I'm asking you to. Just okay. Come on. Start young. Work your way up.
Start young. Okay, getting out of childhood. No. So, like I mentioned, I had played almost a decade of AAU before I got to the University of Connecticut.
Which is the best in the business.
Yes, go Huskies. Yeah. I'm a little upset right now about the Final Four, but it's
okay. I just want to mention my Baylor Bears right here,
you
if
know,
I could for 1 second.
It doesn't have to be talked about.
We could just bring it up because Baylor can't be talked about every year, but we can be talked about this year, so Sikkim Bears.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I received that.
Hey,
you know, I have very little to do with their basketball program, but I do believe in it, and it's a strong program.
No, they were great.
They were fantastic.
I'm happy for them. It was a great year for them, and, you know, they came into the tournament number one, and it's hard to do
you
what
know
you're expected
that feeling.
To do. I do.
Yes, that pressure.
To do what you're expected to do. When you,
yes.
It's one thing when you're an underdog and everyone's cheering for you, but
exactly.
To win when you're expected to win is, you know,
well,
I understand
UConn
that.
Did it year after year.
Yeah,
after year.
I understand that existence, and it's hard because it's almost like when you win, it's like relief.
Yeah.
Instead of like
exhilaration.
Exactly. Yeah. And so that's it's a hard thing to do. So good job, Bears. But yeah, I won my first AAU national championship when I was 14. And was recruited by everybody in the country. And by the time I was a junior, I knew I wanted to verbally commit to the University of Connecticut. Mm. And I did. Was a three-time high school state champion with my Lady Eagles up at Collins Hill. We were ranked
the green and gold.
Yep, green, white, black.
That sounds like every school. It's
too
many.
Silver, gold, maybe some throwback red. I don't know. You never know what's going to happen with jerseys these days.
This is too good.
And so, state champion. We were ranked number one in the nation my senior year.
Amazing, Maya.
We were undefeated, and it was awesome. I had two head coaches because my first head coach, Angie Hembry, who coached up at Norcross most recently, was my coach for the first 2 years, and then Tracy Tipton, my second 2 years. They were great coaches, great motivators, and helping us to prepare and just be great teammates. And so I had really, really good preparation going into Connecticut, and became a starter toward the middle, kind of end of my freshman year, because we had one of our starters tear her ACL. And so I was kind of thrown into that starting position, even though I was playing starter minutes already. But had a really good freshman year. And then the next year became National Player of the Year as a sophomore, and ended up being a three-time State Farm All-American, and
it was
National
the
Player
beginning.
Of the Year in my junior and senior year. My senior year of high school, won all the awards you could win, and it started young for me. But thankfully, I had, like I said, really good coaches that helped me stay focused, and I just soaked up everything that they gave me. I love to learn. And so I guess I was different because I listened to my coaches. So,
well, I think you've always appreciated the gifts you've been given, but you've also known that they weren't just about you.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'll be honest. If I came out of high school and I'd wanted everything, and then I went to college and wanted everything, I would probably be a punk.
Oh, it's set up that way.
It's set up for you to be a punk.
For sure.
And yet you're not a punk. So what slice of humility is there? Yeah. And I want to go on to talk about your career too, but where did you figure out I can't behave as though I'm the superstar? Yeah.
That's, you know, that's one of the other things that's passionate on my mind right now is I want to be very careful when I encourage people to run after stuff. Because when you run after certain things, you have to be ready for what, yeah. what's going to come with that. And like we just talked about, if you're running after success, success can mess you up.
Yes, it can.
And so, because, you know, we're in a broken world and a lot of the systems and the things that we come up through are designed to make you idolize yourself.
Yes.
And to make you promote yourself and your brand and your platform and your image and your influence and your success and your records. And it's just so easy to fall into that lie. And so I think because I was so convinced at a younger age before I became Maya Moore of God's greatness and goodness, it started there.
Yeah.
My perspective and how I saw myself was true before it really got
all the accolades
hard.
Yeah, were in your life.
Before it really got intense and more and more intense. And so I was rooted, but that doesn't mean I could just chill and go through it. Like I got rooted, but then I also got a rhythm of, I was trained in the faith before I was trained as a national champion.
What
you know?
A gift. What a gift.
What a gift. God, a gift. Thank you. Didn't know I was going to need that. Like I started getting, but I wanted it. Like I wanted to get in the word. I wanted to learn. And I wanted to be prepared and soak up as much as I can because I just started to fall in love with the Lord and His Word and got trained on how to think about money, got trained on how to think about myself, got trained on things in life are big and you have to trust God. And so when those hard times came, I had a plan.
Yeah.
Biblically.
Yeah.
You know, which is obviously the best plan and training you can have. And so I wasn't perfect. I made mistakes, but I knew how to bounce back and I knew where to go to get back right.
Yeah.
And so.
And I think you lived in it every day. So you kept yourself tethered.
Right.
To things that were more important than
exactly.
winning.
Exactly. Yes. You have to fight.
And what if there isn't anything more important than winning? I'm thinking of all the people that are listening right. today that. They don't play basketball, but they're trying to achieve at some level, at the highest level. And they're thinking, and I'm successfully doing them, that maybe, or moving in that direction. And it's starting to cost me life.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just costly on the discipline side, but it's costing me believing my own PR.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to go down the path of success, which is a very dangerous path, we all know.
Mm-hmm.
Do I think God wants us to succeed? Absolutely. Do I think He wants to build a platform from which we can speak about His faithfulness? Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I've watched you do it over and over again. Yet, if you had just embraced success as being the point,
right,
you would have probably taken that platform into some jeopardy.
Oh, for sure.
Because it would have become about you, Maya mm-hmm. Moore. Look at her. Look at me. Look at what I've done. I never feel like in your life that you hijacked that stage for yourself.
Mm.
Even though you were being amplified and recognized and lifted up and encouraged. And I believe it was because you had a tether to the person of God.
For sure.
And we always say that humility comes not by looking at ourselves differently, but by seeing God.
Absolutely.
When you see Him, you see yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's tricky too. I mean, it's like you said, it's every day.
Yeah.
Every day you have to fight for truth because there's a lot of lies.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of ways that you can just subtly, it's subtle too in our day and age of subtly promoting yourself, subtly losing track of
what's important.
Of what's important. Yeah. And so, you have to, and that's why I say you don't shortcut it. There's no shortcuts. You have to go through your journey with the Lord and grow and don't wish for success too fast because it could crush you.
Yeah.
I don't think I reached any place fast. I just think the work that in the journey that I've been involved in happened quieter than what people realized. And then when I got there, they're like, wow, where'd you come from?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, no, I've been here.
I've been being built all this
since
time.
I was eight.
Yes.
And
yeah, one layer at a time.
And obviously the Lord opened doors, but there was a journey.
Yeah.
And every day you got to go through it.
Yeah.
But when you get there, you're ready for it.
Yeah.
So I don't want people to think that what they see is, it's that simple.
Yeah.
There's so much that goes on behind the scenes, and people who quote unquote get there are people that love the process.
That's amazing.
Throw themselves into the process.
Yeah.
The stuff that happens when no one else is looking, the stuff that happens off of Instagram, the stuff that happens literally when no one's looking except God.
Yeah.
And the people that embrace that process and don't run away from the hardness of it, those are the ones that you see.
Yeah. And admire.
Yeah, those are the ones you see and admire. So I'm grateful that I had that role modeled for me and that I can be a role model in that way. And Lord, help me continue to be
grace
to
us.
Be that in the season that He has me in now.
So you're in a season of rest. We mentioned it earlier, but you're learning one of the things that you've been focusing on.
Yeah.
One of those three things that feel important right now. And you're learning how to adjust your life to the fact that there are seasons for creating and there are seasons for resting. And man, that's a big transition from where you've been. Even with WNBA and watching all of that unfold, seeing you play out of this country and other countries in off seasons, win championships there.
Yep.
Loads of work and loads of success. Mm-hmm. And now you're a little bit off the radar. You're just resting some and taking an evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
What are you learning about yourself?
Oh, well, I think I've been processing and struggling and wrestling with different things before this season of rest started. Yeah. I look at this season as a season of rest in combination with a season of wrestle. Mm. So in order to wrestle well, you kind of have to have a space to rest. Mm. Because wrestling in a good way of taking time back to analyze and evaluate, where's my heart? Where am I going? Where's God calling me? And is my life structured in a way for me to walk in that calling? And so I got to a point where I felt like I'm at a point in my life where I felt like I was in too many fights, mm-hmm. and it was killing me, because I'm not God.
Yeah.
As much as sometimes I think this world tells us you can do it all and you can be whatever you want to be. And it's like, no.
The truth is you're made of dust.
That's the truth. The truth is I'm extremely fragile.
Yeah.
And I'm finite.
Yeah.
And I need God.
Yeah. Desperately.
So much.
Yes.
And sometimes you get a fresh dose of that reality when you're sitting flat on your butt.
Yeah.
And you've just, life's just whooped you.
Yeah.
And in my case, and in so many of our cases, it's because of good things.
Right.
You were fighting and involved in good things.
Yeah.
Not like
winning, not losing.
Winning,
yes.
And good things,
yes.
And admirable,
great
noble
investments.
Things.
Yeah.
And you just look up and you're like, but I'm barely hanging on.
Yeah.
And I started to learn that I have to be so, you know, the verse that talks about, like, not being, I don't want this to be taken out of context, being violent against myself. So it's like killing your flesh sounds mm-hmm. like, oh, that's like killing and violence. It's like, no, we have to be aggressive at mm-hmm. telling ourselves we are finite. Mm-hmm. That's what I mean of, like, aggressively, intentionally telling myself
positioning
no.
Positioning yourself.
Telling myself no to things that are going to make me think that I run the world. Huh. You know what I mean? It's like, it's so hard because we're in a day and age where it's like, you can do it, go after it. And we should go after stuff. But when you're successful and you have access to doing a lot,
right?
You can subtly start to diminish because you're being stretched too thin. Mm. Your desire to want to help and do good tips over into being detrimental.
Yeah.
And so I had to kind of sit back and say, okay, let's breathe.
Yes.
I'm leading too many things.
Yeah.
So Lord, help me let go of some of these things that I really love, but maybe I can't lead.
Yeah.
I can
be a part
pray,
of
be
of
a
them,
part, maybe. You know, mm-hmm. maybe give financially, yeah. but I can't be the face.
Yeah. Yeah. And why would you want to be if God wasn't leading you to be anyway? I think sometimes when we're in the busyness and the success of life and it's just rolling, mm-hmm. right? I don't even have time to assess whether God's in this or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think you're in a season of assessment.
Right. I totally agree. I'm just growing up and, you know, I'm 29 and I'll be 30 in a couple months. And it's just like, this is what 20-year-olds go through, you know, 20-somethings. My mom reminds
me. And 30 and 40 and 50, and 40, just so you know.
Right. My mom reminds me, like, honey, like,
this is life.
Yes, yeah. It is. So don't feel like you're normal.
Yeah.
Like you're wrestling and it's hard.
Yeah,
you figure
hard.
Things out. And between the age of 25 and 30, it's different than when you're 21 to 24.
Yeah.
And so, you know, be encouraged. Don't feel bad about the struggle.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I think we just feel bad when we struggle. It's like, no.
Yeah, we should feel good about that.
The struggle means
it leads
you're
us
alive.
To beautiful places.
Yeah.
And it does mean that you're alive.
Yeah.
And it means that you're fighting the good fight.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of the fight for good fight in following Jesus is knowing with the right yeses.
Yeah.
And saying yes to the right things, saying no to the other things. I mean, the most powerful yes we'll ever say comes from the no's that we've already said.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just true for everyone's life today. And we're learning a lot about that around here. I think the timing of it is so
it's great.
Amazing for your life as
so
you
good.
Listen to God and try to obey him
mm-hmm.
and try to stay on that path that he's created for you and to make ends to, I want to make it to the end of my life successfully, not with accolades, but with what God intended for my life.
Come on.
So that when I cross that finish line, whatever point in life that is, and I'm done and I'm standing before Jesus, I hear from him, way to go, good mm-hmm. and faithful servant.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only thing I know, Maya Moore, that you care about.
Yes.
And so to do that well, sometimes you have to stop, look around, assess, and follow well.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that this is the season that you're doing that, and I admire you so much for it.
Thank you.
It's beautiful to watch. So thanks for talking today. We're going to have to continue the conversation because I have about 87 more things I would love to discuss. So we'll
Absolutely.
Do that at some point.
Love
but
it.
I just appreciate you. I love seeing you serve our house. I love the way you show up when things are unseen. I love watching you on a stage, stand in a choir full of people and sing your heart out to God. You're a worshiper first and foremost. And I love seeing you as a part of this house. So God bless you. We love you.
Thank you so much. Love you too.
We want to thank Maya for taking the time to join us today and share so much of her journey. There's still so much more to Maya, and if you'd like to hear more about her social justice campaign, check out winwithjustice.org. And if you want to learn more about The Grove and what's coming up here, check out passioncitychurch.com/The Grove and follow us on Instagram at @PCC_The Grove. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time on The Grove Podcast.